Okay, we're moving on into John chapter 4. John chapter 4. And we're going to pick it up in verse 43. John 4, verse 43. Okay. We've been reading and studying in the book of John about how Jesus was down in the southern part of Israel, doing his thing, ministering to people. And as he was doing that, a lot of people started noticing him, and the crowds started showing up. And then the controversy started. Because, see, John the Baptist had already been ministering for a while. And people who were going to John's church started going to Jesus' church. And Jesus was attracting more crowds than John. And when Jesus heard about it, see, John didn't have a problem with it. We read about that in, you know, John, end of John 3. He was saying, hey, great, that's what I'm trying to do. Go to Jesus. Go to his church. I like that. I think that's cool. But when Jesus heard about it, he kind of felt for his buddy, John. And so he left and went up north so there wouldn't be this controversy that people keep trying to pit people against. You know, my church is better than your church. No, it's stupid, silly stuff. I remember Pastor Chuck sharing once years ago about how he used to belong to like the Rotary Club or something. It was one of those business clubs. And one week they were decided they were going to have a bring your competition to the club week. And so everybody was going to bring, you know, their main competition in the community. You know, if your grocery store, you're going to bring the guy from the grocery store across town. You know, you're going to bring him to the club. And a couple of the guys said to Chuck, who are you going to bring? What pastor are you going to bring? And Chuck said, hey, look, I'm not in competition with other pastors. They're on the same team as I am. I'm going to go down to a local bar and bring the tavern owner to the meeting. See, that's the right attitude, you know. We're not in competition with other churches, you know. We're all on the same team. We all worship the same Jesus. And so Jesus didn't like this competition, so he left. And he went up north. And he did it on his way up north. He decided that he just had to go through Samaria. And while he was in that yucky place called Samaria, where all those yucky people called Samaritans hang out, he met the gal who he had an appointment with, and she ended up believing in her Messiah. And what ended up eventually was that a whole bunch of people from her town, from the city of Sychar, ended up coming out and getting to believe in Jesus. Awesome thing. And we read in verse 40, it says, so when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them. And he abode there 2 days. So, you know, he was going to go on and just keep going on up north to Galilee, but he decided, well, we'll hang out here for a little bit and we'll just stretch this ministry out for 2 more days. Now, we pick it up in verse 43. Now, after 2 days, after those same 2 days that he kind of hung out there, he departed thence and went into Galilee. And so he moves on up to where he was heading, up to the northern part of Israel. And this northern section, Galilee, this is the area where Jesus actually spent most of his time in his ministry. This is where, you know, he probably spent 70-80% of his time was in Galilee. And it said, verse 40, okay, so he went into Galilee, verse 44. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet hath no honor in his own country. Huh? Now, see, he's been in Judea, and he's getting a little too popular there. So he moves up, and he camps out in Samaria, and gosh, all kinds of people are starting to come to him. And then it says, he goes into Galilee, and it says, the reason is that Jesus himself testified that a prophet hath no honor in his own country. Now, Jesus actually had said this thing about a prophet hath no honor in his own country. He said this 3 different times. We have it recorded 3 different places in the Gospels. In Mark 6:4, in Matthew 13:57, and in Luke 4:24. And in each of these 3 places, Jesus is referring to his hometown of Nazareth. That's where he grew up. You know, he was born in Bethlehem, but he after they went to Egypt for a while, his parents brought him back, and they settled in the northern part in Nazareth. And in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the accounts all have to do with, you know, that when he was preaching in the synagogue at his hometown, didn't get a good response. In fact, the people were kind of going, "What's this? You know, what do you think you're doing getting up here and talking? You're just Joseph's kid, you know? What is this?" And in the Gospels, that's where Jesus relates it. And he says, well, you know, it's written that a prophet doesn't have any honor in his own country. But here, it's not quite like talking about that. We have to keep a couple of things in mind. First, I still believe he's still talking about Nazareth, about and maybe even the surrounding area of Galilee. And so we've got to keep that in mind. I don't think that's changed. I don't think he's talking now about Judea, and that's why he's left Judea. We know that he left Judea because it was too popular, right? Not because he wasn't popular enough. He left Judea because he was too popular. And we've already seen that Jesus had a good response in Judea and a good response in Samaria. And now he moves on into Galilee for, he said, for Jesus himself testified that a prophet hath no honor in his own country. What's Jesus doing here? I think he's slowing things down a little bit. That's kind of the flow of the story here. That's the, you know, the word F-O-R that starts off that verse 44. For Jesus himself, that means that's the reason why Jesus went into Galilee. Because he hath no honor in his own country. In other words, Jesus' ministry was to last for 3 years. And you want to know a secret? Jesus never planned on building a big empire, a mega church. Did you know that? That wasn't his goal. His goal wasn't, you know, having, you know, 50,000 people jam-pack a stadium so he can say, "This is my people." Jesus came for a different reason. He came to save the lost. And he came to do that by dying on a cross. And so things got a little bit popular here down south in Judea, and then he stops off in Samaria where everybody's going to hate him, you know, and then they come to love him, and he only stays there 2 days, and then he decides to go to Galilee because we all know a prophet doesn't have any honor in his own country, because he's kind of keeping things going at a slower pace, to kind of slow things down. There's an application here, and then I think sometimes in our lives we need to be careful that we're really in touch with God's purpose for us and God's calling in our lives. Now, we can get really easily sidetracked by glitter and glamour and glitz and, you know, and you know, fun stuff, which isn't all bad, but we want to be sure that we stay on track with God's plan for us. Do you hear me? Do you hear where I'm going with this? Don't get sidetracked away from God's original call in your life. You know, if God put this vision of a particular ministry years ago in your life, I know people who I kind of wait for them because it's very clear what their call is. You know, it's like right across their face. You know, and they get sidetracked from one thing to another, Further away from that original call. What's the verse? There's the verse in Colossians. I'm winging it here. I'm sorry, this isn't in my notes. There's a verse in Colossians. It's a verse that every time I read it, I go, okay, stay on track. Stay on track. There's one little short verse. I think it's like at the end of verse of chapter 3 or something like that, where Paul writes to the Colossians and he says, and say to Archippus, take heed to the ministry that you receive from the Lord, that you fulfill it. 4:17. Thank you, Leanne. Praise the Lord. Beloved, don't stray from God's call. You know, keep, you know, you think of the horses, you know, like the ones that pull the carriages at knots, you know, and they have those big black things on the sides of their eyes. They're called blinders. And you know why they're there? To keep the horse going straight. Because horses like to look at the things that are going on around them. And if a dog comes up barking off to the side of them, well, they want to look at the dog, you know, and they kind of want to go, and they look and they walk that way, you know. And so you put blinders, on their eyes so they stay on track. And we need to do that, beloved. Keep the blinders on your eyes. Stay on track with what God's called you to do. And so Jesus, hey, wait, going a little bit too fast here. This isn't the plan. This isn't the plan to build, you know, mega church here. We're going to just stay on track. And so he goes north to Galilee, where he's, you know, expecting and where he's had a little, you know, not quite as popular because they knew him as a kid, you know, and they never respect you when they know you as a kid, you know. That's true. And so verse 45, then, yeah, but look what happens. Verse 45, then when he was coming to Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things that he did at Jerusalem at the feast. For they also went unto the feast. So here Jesus is trying to kind of keep a slow pace on things and to go to Galilee because, you know, won't be getting a whole lot of honor there. We can slow things down. And he gets to Galilee and everybody's inviting him over for dinner. Because they too, just like Jesus, had gone south during the Passover and had seen Jesus had done some miracles there in Jerusalem, and they had saw that. And so now he's, you know, gosh, he's even welcomed in Galilee. Verse 46. So Jesus came again into Cana of Galilee, where he made the water wine. And there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. So as Jesus goes up into Galilee, he comes to that city of Cana. Now, we read about that in John chapter 2, and you can get the tape, right? In Cana, that was where, remember, Jesus was invited to the wedding? Remember that story? And they ran out of wine. Somebody hadn't been planning right, and they ran out of wine. And Jesus took these water pots, filled them up. We figured it was somewhere in the vicinity of 120 gallons of water, and he turned it into wine. And they were jazzed. It was like, whoa, where'd this wine come from? Now, it was in that city. This is where he arrives, in Cana of Galilee. And a guy shows up, a certain nobleman, or the word in the Greek speaks of a royal official, probably somebody who was attached to the court of Herod, King Herod at the time. He's some kind of a government official. And his son was sick at Capernaum. So apparently this man lived in Capernaum, and that's where his boy is. Now, Cana of Galilee, if you draw the map of Israel and you've got Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, and here's Sea of Galilee, Cana of Galilee is straight across. That'd be kind of like, Jesus is hanging out in Fullerton and a guy shows up from Corona. Okay, that's about 17 miles, that kind of a thing. And so this guy shows up from Capernaum, and his kid's sick, in verse 47. And when he heard that Jesus was come out of Judea into Galilee, he went unto him. Now see, word has gotten around about Jesus. People have started to talk about this thing, this Jesus guy. And so he hears that Jesus has come north to Galilee, and he goes to him, and it says, and besought him that he would come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Now, just a couple notes here. It says that he besought him. The word besought, it's a Greek word which means to question, to ask, to request, to entreat, to beg. And the way that John records it, in the Greek, they have, this is a grammar lesson here, there's different tenses. You know, remember your English grammar? Huh? Please? This is what's called an imperfect tense. And what this means is this. Jesus, he's saying that this man was, in the past, he was continually asking Jesus. It wasn't just he wrote him a short note on the prayer request, handed it to him, and walked off. The idea is that this man was kind of continually just, you know, talking to Jesus. You know, God, my son, and he's really sick, and he's got this fever, and boy, man, he's about to die, and Jesus, can't you just come and heal the guy? And he's just going on and on and on. There's a continuous action going on. That's important. That's important to this story. He besought him. He was continually asking for his son. And it says that he was continually asking Jesus that he would come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Now, that he would come down. Capernaum is up about 1,000 feet in elevation. It's up in the hills. Capernaum is down by the seacoast. It's down below sea level, actually. Capernaum is. So that's the idea of coming down. He's talking about elevation. Coming down, that he would heal his son, for he was at the point of death. In other words, it's not like his son, had a cold or something, and was up coughing all night, so he went to Jesus and stuff. This is a serious thing here. The kid is about to die. And he's very, very worried about his son. So he comes to Jesus, and he says, Jesus, would you please just come on down and heal my kid? Verse 48, then said Jesus unto him, except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. Lord, isn't that kind of like mean? I mean, you're Daniel's at home and he's about to die, and you come to Jesus, oh Jesus, please come here. Boy, except all you want to see is a sign and a wonder, and you won't believe unless that happens. That doesn't sound very nice, does it? Couple of things here. Except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. The ye there, it's plural. He's not talking just... Now, he is talking to this man. It says that he's talking to the man. But he's talking more than just this man. Because what he's talking about are the Jews. This was a genetic trait, I guess, of the Jewish people. They wanted to see miracles. They wanted to see signs. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 1:22. He says, he's just stating facts. He says, for the Jews require a sign, and the Greeks seek after wisdom. You know, when you're witnessing to a Greek, well, you've got to have the arguments all in line. When you're witnessing to a Jew, well, they want to see something. Like, pull flowers out of a hat or something. Do something, this is a trait, of the Jews. And here's Jesus rebuking this guy. Now, I think there's something in here. And you'll see this as we develop this story and we see it. But, on one hand, you think right off the bat, well, it doesn't look like Jesus is... I mean, it doesn't look like this man's, begging him for a sign. But what's he saying? He says he's asking him, entreating him to come down and heal my son. He's saying, I don't think this can really happen. You can really heal him unless you come from Cana of Galilee and come 17 miles, come 1,000 feet down in elevation, and come to Capernaum. I know it's not going to happen unless you're there. So you've got to come. You've got to come. You've got to come. And Jesus turns and rebukes him. Because this man's faith, this man's belief, is kind of dependent on something happening. You've got to come down here. My son will not be healed, Jesus, unless you physically move yourself from Cana of Galilee and come down the hill to Capernaum. And he rebukes him. It's kind of fascinating. Let's look at Matthew 8, verse 5. Matthew 8, verse 5. It's kind kind of ironic that there's another story of somebody that was asking for healing, and this took place in Capernaum. Okay? Matthew 8, verse 5. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, this is a different time, different situation. When Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him. This is a Roman soldier. And saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home, sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. He doesn't put the restrictions on this guy. He just says, okay, I will come and heal him. And the centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this man, go, and he goeth, and to another man, come, and he cometh, and to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard it, he marveled, and said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. Because see, those Jews, they just always want to see things. They want me to come here and do this and do that, you know, and they don't believe unless I do a trick for them. Isn't that fascinating? So here's a non-Jew, and he's got more faith. Why? Because he believes Jesus won't even have to speak the word. He doesn't believe Jesus has to actually come down and physically touch his son or his servant. He doesn't believe that you know, I'll only get healed if I have Oral Roberts lay his hands on me. Or, you know, unless, and I'm going to put my dear sister on the spot, unless Karina can lay hands on me, I know I'm not going to receive that release that I need. See, we put, you know, and sometimes, see, God will honor that. God will still honor that kind of a faith. But sometimes Jesus wants to stretch you a little bit and take you a little bit beyond that, doesn't he? See, here's this guy, you got to come down, please, my son's about to die, you got to come down. And Jesus kind of rebukes him about this sign stuff. You know, I think we also need to kind of be careful about craving miracles. Jesus said in Matthew 12, verse 39, an evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign. Jesus isn't looking for people who say, show me, and I'll believe. But Jesus is looking for people who say, I'll believe, and you'll show me. To his disciple Thomas, you know the story after Jesus was raised from the dead, and he appeared to everybody else, but man, Thomas was out at In-N-Out Burgers, you know, getting a, you know, vanilla shake and fries. And he missed it. And he came back and Jesus had already been there and gone. And Thomas said to his disciples, you guys are crazy, man. You must have gone to Shakey's for dinner or something. You guys are seeing things, you know. And unless I see the holes in his side and I see the hands, unless I see it and can touch it, man, I'm not going to believe. Well, Thomas is Jewish, by the way. And you know what? Jesus honored it. Jesus did honor it. You know, you might be struggling, you know, and well, Lord, yeah, but I really need something to hold on to. Well, Jesus will still honor your need, but he also wants to take you beyond that. He wants to take you beyond the need to see something to trust God. Because, see, that's the mature faith. And when Jesus showed up with Thomas, and he said, okay, Thomas, come here, kid. Okay, reach, touch. And he falls on his face and says, my Lord and my God. And Jesus kind of gently but kind of firmly said, Thomas, you believe because you saw, but blessed are those who don't see and still believe. You know, there's a greater blessing from God when even though you don't see the answer to your prayer, you're going to trust God anyway. See, that's what this is all coming down to. That's where this is all coming down to. This is how it fits into our life. Prayer. Prayer. Well, you know, I've been praying for my job to come for 3 months, and I don't see it. That's okay. Does that mean God's not doing anything? And you have to see a sign to believe? You know, I've been praying for a wife for 80 years, it seems like, you know, and God, the women are not coming to this church, you know, or whatever, you know. And does that mean you have to see to believe? See, Jesus wants to stretch you a little bit. And so Jesus kind of, I mean, here's this guy, I mean, come on, Lord, the kid's dying, do something. Don't just stand around and chat at the guy and take pot shots at him. No. See, Jesus is trying, it's time to stretch this man. There's another lesson here. Sometimes you need a hard word from the Lord. You know, well, that's not really very fair. I mean, like, I'm the one that's down and depressed and having a hard time, and now I get rebuked on top of that. Well, you know what, dear beloved? Sometimes you need it. I remember once, years and years ago, graduated from school, and you know, Deb and I were just seeking God. Where do you want us to be involved in ministry? And I was so depressed, and I was out. You know, we had left the church we were attending because we wanted to be involved with Calvary Chapel, and I was out. It took me 2 months to find a job. Nobody wanted to hire me. Remember that, you know? I was so depressed. And one day I spent the day filling out applications, and I was so bummed. And I went down to Newport Beach, and there was a jetty out there, and I walked out on the jetty, and I was so depressed. It's like, oh God, when will it ever happen? You know, I thought you'd called me to ministry, you know, and I don't understand this, God. And I was sitting down there on the rock in front of the jetty. I just don't understand it. And oh, so sad. I was so crying. And all of a sudden, this huge wave. And I went. And I felt like the Lord was saying, Richard, stop feeling so sorry for yourself. You know, I'm going to take care of you, son. I felt that very clear. Very. Message received. Yes, Lord. I busted up. I thought it was great. You see, beloved, sometimes we need to hear a little hard word from the Lord. Proverbs 27:6 says this, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. You see, sometimes the people that care about you are going to have to say something a little awkward. You know, I think you need to really work on this area in your life, bro. But see, faithful are the wounds of a friend because they care enough to say something. You know, and well, you know, I don't know if I ought to tell him he's about to drive off the cliff. You know, I don't want to hurt his feelings. He might be offended and feel like, well, gosh, I think he's a terrible driver, you know, and gosh, I don't think I want to hurt his feelings. Well, beloved, he's heading. It's 5, 4, 3, 2, and he's off the edge. Sometimes we need to say something, and sometimes we need to receive something. Proverbs 15:31 says, the ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise. He that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul, but he that heareth reproof getteth understanding. So here's this man, his kid dying, and Jesus zeroes right in, dead center, right, hits right in the heart, where the guy's having a hard time with his faith, and Jesus fires that missile out there, and it hits the target. Man, you know, you're into this science thing. You just won't believe unless you're there and you see it happen, and it's all right there, and you just won't believe, will you? Well, look what happened. Let's go back to John. Except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. Verse 49. The nobleman saith unto him, Sir, come down ere my child die. I still got that come down thing in there. Do you see that? But what's changed? He called him Sir. Now, maybe I'm going to go out on a limb here, because I believe most of your translations all say Sir. But you know what the Greek word is? Kurios. Kurios. That's the word for Lord. It appears over 500, close to 600 times in the New Testament, and over 550 times it's translated Lord. And yes, maybe, you know, this man is just using this in the term of respect and all. I wonder. The definition of kurios, he to whom a person or a thing belongs, about which he has power of deciding. In other words, you're in control. The master, the Lord. In other words, you know, he still does this come down thing because he's a little confused. He's not really sure what Jesus quite is getting at, you know. But you are my kurios. So kurios, will you come down, please? I don't want my son to die. And see, Jesus is starting to get through to this guy's shell. See, that's oftentimes exactly the point where the Lord just is getting us to. It's the point where we're willing to say, Lord. I remember I came to know the Lord in, He was my Savior in 8th grade. And I came forward and one of the deacons took me aside and I prayed and I asked Jesus into my heart. But for a couple years, for me, being a Christian was all about doing some things. It was about, if I'm going to be a Christian, I've got to read my Bible. So I read my little Good News for Modern Man, you know, every night before I went to bed, and did that for a little while. And being a Christian means you go to church on Sunday and Wednesdays. That's kind of the way we did things. And that's what being a Christian is all about, you know. The rest of the time is mine. You know, and that's the way I lived my life for a couple of years. You know, Jesus has Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, and Wednesday nights. I got the rest of the time. And I can do the rest of the time whatever I want. But you see, Jesus wants a whole lot more than that. He wants to be Lord of all, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 and a quarter day per year, 100 years in a century. Should I keep going on? He wants to be Lord of your entire life. And as you're going to see, this is the breakthrough for this man. It's obvious by Jesus' response that he's going to give. It's obvious. This is the point he wanted this man to come to. For him to say, kurios. And so let me just say this. For some of you, maybe Jesus has just been a little bit hard on you. It's like, gosh, Lord, how come you're being so tough on me? Well, maybe, let me just ask you this. Is he your kurios? Is he Lord of all? He wants it all. He's really funny about it that way. You know, he wants the entire thing. Even your free time. Oh, man, you mean my free time? You know, okay, I'll give him my time at work. You know, I can do that. I hate it anyway. But my free time, you know, I mean, you know, doesn't mean I can't go watch movies? I don't know. That's for Jesus to decide.
Whoa.
It's not for me to... I'm not going to tell you what you can see or can't see. It's not my job. But Jesus will tell you. It doesn't mean that you'll never have fun. Oh, you'll have loads of fun. And you know, you might even get to go to a movie every once in a while. But He'll be in control, moving your life. Kurios. And so, He says, Kurios, come down here, my child, I. Jesus saith unto him, go thy way, thy son liveth. He didn't say, okay, I'm packing up, I'll be with you in a minute. He just says, you go, your son is alive. And he's going to stay alive. That's the implication here. And the man believed the word that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. And the man believed. See, there was a growth in this man's life. He started off, he approached Jesus, and he had his demands. He knew exactly what Jesus had to do if it was going to work. You know, you're going to have to come down. You know, that's just the way it is. And Jesus kind of, you know, hammered a little bit at him. And then he says, okay, Lord. And there's the growth in this man. Why doesn't God always answer my prayers like that? How come? Why is it that all my prayers aren't answered instantly? Some of us have been reading a book by Andrew Murray called With Christ in the School of Prayer. And the chapter that we read last week was about persevering prayer, about learning to pray even if you don't see it. And even if you got to do it for a couple of days at a time, you know, in a row, or maybe a couple of weeks in a row, or maybe even a couple of years in a row. Persevering prayer. And how come it doesn't always just happen like this? Is it I lack faith? Well, that could be part of it. It might not be. But sometimes the reason is because we need to grow a little bit to we're at the place where we're ready to receive it. Because see, Jesus saw in this man, he's got to come to this place in his life. I need to be kurios. I need to be in control here. This man isn't the one that's calling the shots. I'm the Lord of the universe. He needs to let me do it. And this man needed to come to this place. And so Jesus kind of had to rebuke him here a little bit. And the man responded. And he grew. And Jesus answered his prayer. It says, Andrew Murray writes this, in his spiritual nature, man too is under the law of gradual growth that reigns in all created life. Only on the path of development can he reach his divine destiny. And only the Father, who determines the times and seasons, knows the moment when the soul or the church is ripened to that fullness of faith in which it can really take and keep a blessing. As a father who longs to have his only child home from school, and yet waits patiently until the time of training is completed, so it is with God and His children. See, there are times where we've got to grow a little bit more before God says, okay, you're ready to receive this answer now. And so we need to persevere in prayer and be open to God's training and God's teaching and God's molding and God's shaping in our lives. Because God, who is Lord of all, who is all-powerful, and who loves you really a whole lot, He's not going to like, well, I don't know, I don't think I feel like answering Pam's prayers today. I just feel kind of in an ordinary mood. No. When God is ready, and when you're ready, it will happen. But see, sometimes we have to grow to the point of receiving it. We need to persevere and to hold on until you get your answer. Jesus said in Matthew 7:7, ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. And And when he was speaking this, the words in the Greek are, it's a continual. Continually ask. Continually seek. Continually knock. There's that persevering again. Just like the man was beseeching. He besought Jesus. There was a continual thing. That was good. That was good. And he came back to Jesus again and again. And we need to learn to continue in prayer and to persevere. It's not just like, well, I prayed a little prayer yesterday and God didn't answer it, so I guess that must be it. It's all over. Not necessarily. Sometimes God wants you to persevere and to keep going on and to keep going on in prayer. It's kind of like there was a woman who telephoned the manager of a large opera house and told him that she had lost a valuable diamond pin the night before at the concert. The man asked her to hold a line. The search was made and the brooch was found. And when he got back to the phone, she had hung up. And he waited for her to call again. She never called again. They put an ad in the paper. She never responded. The answer came, but she wasn't on the line anymore. Persevere. Keep asking. Keep asking. Keep asking. So, let's move on. Jesus said, "Go thy way, thy son liveth." And the man believed the word in Jesus, which that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. And as he was now going down, so this is the man now, the nobleman, when he was going down, his servants met him and told him, saying, "Thy son liveth." Then inquired he of them the hour which he began to amend. Well, what hour he started getting better? He was kind of curious. I wonder here. And they said unto him, "Yesterday, at the seventh hour, the fever left him." So the father knew that it was at the same hour in which Jesus said unto him, "Thy son liveth," and himself believed. And his whole house, his whole family came to believe in Jesus as Messiah because of this whole situation. It kind of reminds me, have you ever heard of these? I was trying to find some really neat example. I couldn't, but it's one of those things where it happens all the time, so you never write them down. But haven't you heard of situations? I've heard of situations where people wake up in the middle of the night and they're prompted to pray for like a missionary in South America or something, you know, and they find out a year or so later, they were just kind of hung on and just was thinking about it, and they find out a year later that, you know, that was the hour that this thing happened and they were really in need. And then God did a wonderful deliverance. You know, at that very hour. At that very hour. See, God's not limited to location. He doesn't have to be there. You don't have to be there. You can pray here and things are changed in Russia. Whoa, cool. Man, intercontinental ballistic prayer. And I just want to encourage you, beloved. You know, when you have those moments where suddenly you have this strong impression and this person, yeah, that's one. Yeah, you called me the other day. Yeah, that was one. There we go. There's the example. You know, Craig just called me up the other day, and man, I was really bummed, and I was having a hard time. And he calls up and says, "How you doing? I just kind of, God put you on my heart, and I just felt like calling you." And you know what? My buddy Craig called me. You know, at that very hour, God prompted, he responded, and shoot, I was blessed. I was blessed. So as God prompts you, beloved, let's respond. Let's learn to respond. Verse 54, this is again the second miracle that Jesus did when he was come out of Judea into Galilee. Now, it doesn't mean that as of the end of John chapter 4, Jesus has only done two miracles in his whole life. No, there's many more miracles that weren't recorded. We know that there was some that happened in Jerusalem, and we have no record of them at all. But we saw that at the beginning of the Gospel of John, that John is only going to pick out seven specific miracles of Jesus. And those are the ones that he's going to highlight through his gospel. The first one was the wedding at Cana. And there was a special reason for it. In fact, the word miracle here is a Greek word that talks about an attesting sign. It means it's a sign, it's a miracle, It has special significance to it. There's a special reason for it. It teaches us something about Jesus. The wedding at Cana taught us about how gracious and loving he is and how joyful and a blast Jesus is to have at a party. This miracle now is supposed to teach us something else. What does it teach us? To me, it teaches me a lot that Jesus wants to be Lord. And he was just waiting to hear that kurios. It teaches me that our God is an awesome God, and he transcends time and space and man. All he has to do is just speak the word. I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, you know, it would be just like the Lord if some, you know, 2-3 years down the road, somebody is going through their closet and they find a tape of August 20th, 1995. And they're in their hospital room and they're just struggling and having a hard time and thinking, oh, if only this could happen. And you see, Jesus only has to speak the word. It doesn't mean that that person that you want to have come and pray for you has to show up. Jesus only has to speak the word. And clear across the miles, it happens. We have an awesome God, a loving God. He's not limited by location. Yeah. And I think it also teaches us perseverance in prayer. You may get a no at first. You may even get kind of a little rebuke at first. And then Jesus will give it to you. Let's stand and pray.